everyone. Welcome to episode 179 of Well Met, a Hearthstone podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com. Today is Monday, December 17th, 2018. I'm Danny Donuts, and with me today we have Ray and a special guest. But before we get to the guest, let's head over to Ray. How you doing, man?
I am doing fantastic this week. I'm super excited. I just got the email from Blizzard that I made it to playoffs officially, and that was pretty exciting to see. I kind of fixed my sleep schedule because I was playing in some European Artifact tournaments, and last week was not so fantastic. I was pretty sick. I had to miss Philadelphia because I was, like, low-key dying, but, you know, that happens to me occasionally, like, a few times a year. I didn't really reach my my goal of amount of times died per year, so I had to meet the quota before the end of the year, so it just happened to happen now, or last week.
Yeah, December is a pretty big month for that.
Apparently, but today is a good day because we have a special guest on the podcast, and that special guest is Mega Man Music. I don't know if you guys have heard of him, but I will let him introduce himself. Mega Man, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, we had a lot, you know, just colds. Everyone were going around the house. The kids were sick, but now everyone's better. You know, a lot of people might know me from the community. I post a lot of, like, predictions and stats on Twitter. I'm also a team owner of Run and Gun Esports with Insom, and I'm a player too. I'm not, like, a top tier player, but I did top 8 at Orange County, and I unfortunately barely missed out on playoffs this time. Couldn't get the top 50 I needed. So yeah,
not, were you close?
If with the top 100, I would have been at 27. So I could have easily camped the top 100, but I didn't get there. But I blew it to try to go for the 50 that I knew I needed.
Okay, but, like, so were you? I meant, like, towards the end. Like, were you close? Like, were you, like, I was top 40, top 100?
I was 45 with 12 hours left on Asia.
Oh man!
Oh wow!
And then you tried to push for. Obviously, you need to get higher because never going to hold top 50.
Yeah,
so
exactly. Probably if I win two more games, I get in there. Maybe.
Yeah, that's the worst, man. I was in a very similar situation, where I didn't know if I needed top 100. Top 100 gave me 28, and I didn't know if that was enough. People were telling me that I should try to push for top 50, but when I started camping, it was around 12 hours left. But I was, like, rank 40 something, and I thought that would hold top 100, which it ended up doing. But so many people were trying to get me to just queue up one more game. I was just like, man, I don't know. I'm really feeling this top 100. Like, I'm really feeling that 28 points is going to get me there. I don't know. I have people telling me it's 100% guaranteed. I have the other half of the people telling me that you're not going to make it. It was so stressful.
Yeah, I just kind of barely missed twice, too, because you know, after OC finished, like, right at the end of last month, I had no intention of even trying for playoffs. I'm like, well, I have all these points now, man, I should try. And I went from, like, 4K to, like, just barely missing out on top 100 in the last 2 days. Playing a pretty unhealthy number of games. And, yeah, and then I just barely missed this time, too. Which it happens. It's hard, you know.
That's how you know you're a true Hearthstone player, is, like, once you've hit that threshold where you're just, like, you look back on it, you look back on how many games you've played, and you're just disgusted with yourself. You're like, man, I really just did that.
I actually did that earlier this week. I went back to the number of wins that I had, and then I multiplied it out, and I'm like, holy crap, I've spent so much time just doing
my
this.
My overall game numbers are not insane. Like, I don't even have all golden classes, and the ones I do have are not, like, I think one of them is, like, above 1,000. So, you know, I'm in a more modest range compared to a lot of other players, but yeah.
Yeah, those last couple days, they get everyone, honestly. That's probably the most stressful time of the month for any competitive Hearthstone player that's just trying to push for points to get into playoffs. And I'm super lucky that the 28 points ended up making it, and now I get to try my luck in Virginia, get to hang out with one of your I was gonna say teammates, but it's more like, What do you call somebody when, like, you own the team but they're on the team?
He's a teammate. We're all part of a team trying to have success. But yeah, etc.
Yeah, etc. I'm really excited to get to go and see everyone because I missed That was the worst part about missing Philly, is just not being able to, you know, see everybody, especially with the way things are looking for 2019. It seems like they're going to have a lot less majors.
There could be other official events, though. Like, you know, there were non-HCT events before kind of this, like, tour stop model dominated everything. So maybe, you know, DreamHack will still have an event. It just won't be a tour stop, and maybe it'll have these prizes. Who knows?
That's true. And we had all the Geico events, but those... The Geico events were, like, invitational, so it was just, like, a set group of people. It wasn't like when you go to a DreamHack and you just see everybody.
Yeah, and there was, like, South by Southwest Gaming had one some year, and, yeah, some of the PAX.
Yeah,
PAX had
that was all Geico. That was all Geico.
Yeah, that's right, all Geico.
But those were opens when Blizzard gave them points, but then Blizzard implemented this thing where you have to pay $1 million for, like, a licensing fee, otherwise you can't have your prize pool be over a certain number.
Oh,
and
really? Why'd they do that?
Yeah.
I think the
total is...
It's like 10,000 or something.
Yeah, you have to have $9,999. Yeah. You can't go over 10,000.
Yeah, like,
oh,
their
so
official...
So this had nothing to do with tour stops. This was just, like, a Blizzard-wide policy?
Yeah, it was new. It happened...
Well, it had been around, but no one had known about it, and they hadn't called anyone out on it. So,
I don't think it had been around. I think it just started in, like, 2016 or something. It might have.
I mean, yeah, it started in 2016, but I mean, it also came up again recently with a lot of this league stuff going on when they were trying to get the league started.
I feel like I'll save some of my strong thoughts around this when we talk more about 2019.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some news before we get into all that stuff, because I do want to touch on the whole esports 2019 for Hearthstone and, like, how that affects you as a team owner and all that good stuff. But before that, let's get into the news. And first thing is the Rosticon Rumble single player mode, which I have actually not played because, as you know, I refuse to play any single player content and get my quests done because I am stubborn.
Did you do the puzzles, though? You did the puzzles, right?
I didn't. All my quests are... They might have been fun, but I can't do it. I just can't.
It doesn't complete any quests, so you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, that's one of the things that Ray's stuck on. He hasn't unlocked any of the quests.
Yeah, no.
Like, he has his quests locked from it.
Yeah, like the Witchwood ones and the Dungeon Run ones. Like, they never go away.
Yeah.
It's actually very sad, because I miss out on so much gold, which actually just, at this point, directly translates into money lost on some level because of how much Hearthstone I play. I'd probably have like 5,000 more gold or something. I don't know. Somebody did the math and told me, and I was like, man, why you gotta do me like that? Just let me think about that.
Next time you're sitting on the toilet, just play a quick game of Hearthstone that's not ladder.
That's true. I mean, I say that now that ladder doesn't count, I'm just not gonna... I haven't been playing it, but... Now I just haven't been playing Hearthstone. It's just like, oh, it's so bad. It's like I've been playing Hearthstone with people to practice, but I'm practicing specific matchups, and then I'm just getting off and doing other things. Like, I'm just playing so much less Hearthstone now, and it's like, it just feels weird from what it was before. But how have you liked the single player mode, Danny? You're probably the only one who has played it besides JR, and JR is not here today. Because he is busy doing something, I have no idea, but...
Yeah. So, I mean, I played it through, lost the first time, won the second time, and then I haven't touched it since. It seemed exactly like Dungeon Run, where, like, you and your opponent had something on the board that influenced the game. So, it was kind of like a permanent effect. So, it'd be nice to see something like that come up in the future of Hearthstone, like a... different, like, board mechanic where you can have, like, a minion that'll respawn every two turns or something. But otherwise, it felt almost identical to Dungeon Run, where it's like you're going through the dungeon, picking up all the stuff. I don't know. It was very short. It wasn't like Dungeon Run where you had to do all 9 classes. So you got your rewards after your first win. So it was very short. And it was like 20 minutes worth of content for an expansion, which... Most of the time, if you're going to make something like that, at least make it a little bit longer.
So, did it feel kind of repetitive? Like, it didn't really feel like it was, like, super new and interesting, or...
I mean, it was... It was manageable. It was like, oh, okay, I've seen this before. I can do this. But, I mean, I think if you want to get the full effect out of it, you could definitely play through and beat every class. But, I mean, having it locked to one win, you unlock the rewards, was good for someone like me who is kind of doing it as, like, not, like, to play for enjoyment, but just to do it to unlock the stuff.
Yeah, that's kind of sad that there's so many people that are like us, where it's just like, if we actually decide to do the single-player mode, we're doing it to unlock the stuff as quickly as possible, not because what we're actually doing is fun, where I feel like a lot more people had fun with the puzzles, and even when they did the adventures, there were things like
Well, the adventure's the best part, where you'd go through and...
Yeah.
And, like, defeating all the bosses to get the cards. But, I mean, at certain points, it was, like, for... I would assume that Blizzard, like, sells someone the set, and they can't unlock it. I bet a lot of their player base, like, the average player, wasn't good enough to beat the stuff.
No, I mean, the basic ones, like, not the non-advanced ones, I always remember being pretty easy for those, man. I mean...
Yeah, I think it was more the money.
I think they wouldn't... Very rarely did you even have to, like, construct a deck for the basic one. I mean, they were just like a way to like tie single player content to the set, but I think they just wanted to release bigger sets because they wanted to, you know, it was hard to release so many sets a year. It was still just as much work, but they weren't making nearly as much money off of those.
Yeah, I also think that having free, like, the adventures weren't free to play. Like, you had one wing unlocked and then you had to purchase the rest, so I think that saying that the single player content is free to play really attracts a lot of casual players, as opposed to the adventures, where it was just like, sure, they get to experience like one or two wings or however many it was, but to get the full experience you have to pay, and that probably just triggered a large portion of their casual audience, which, as we all know, is probably the most important thing to Blizzard.
Yeah, I mean, I have some friends who, you know, love their tavern brawls every week. They come in, they play them for the pack, even though they're not like trying to build a full collection. They just like playing the tavern brawl. They'll play a bunch of it.
Yeah, it's not my cup of tea, as you guys know, but, you know, I understand and respect what they're doing with that stuff, but overall it just feels like, it's not exciting enough for me to even want to try. It's not like, my favorite thing was when they had the chess game, if you guys remember that, where it was...
Yeah, that one was good.
It was just so unique, and
you're talking
stuff
about the
like
one
that.
That was in, like, was it... One Night Khazaran, or the,
it was One Night in Karazhan.
Yeah,
stuff like that is really cool to me. But even Dungeon Run was cool to me when it first came out, because it was like that whole thing was new.
Initially it was really cool, but I mean, I think they've reused the formula too much. Give us something new.
Way too long to try to clear the quest. Way too long.
Oh, I mean, I still have that quest. I didn't even.
I'm telling you, even if you tried, it might take you several days of being willing to play single player to get through it.
And when you're talking about having to grind on multiple servers as well, like, it's just so frustrating to just have to go on multiple servers and grind through it. Apparently there's, like, some cheat that you can do that somebody mentioned in the Discord, and Jer wanted me to try it, but I'll do it eventually. Maybe. Probably not. Probably never. I'm never getting that quest spot back, let's be honest.
Well, that means you have no quest spots now, right? Or did you clear one of them?
I have one. I have the Witchwood and Kobolds.
Oh, so you did the dungeon run then?
No. I have the Witchwood. Like, I played one dungeon run. That didn't clear the whole quest.
Because more pop up after, right? Where it's like, complete a dungeon and it's like, defeat this next amount of bosses.
No,
you're
the Monster
like
Hunt. The Monster Hunt is the one that took forever. Like, the one that, like, I did on one server, and I'm like, I'm not doing this on other servers, even for the quest.
I can get one goal. Like, I can get...
Okay.
I have one quest available to me.
I've seen people post on Twitter, they have zero spots. They're just like, no dailies.
Oh, yeah. No, I had no dailies for a while until people convinced me to at least do one thing, and then I did it. The only thing that was cool about the dungeon... The only reason why I did the dungeon run was because I was at Seed Story Cup, and Pavel bullied me into it. Because there was, like, some challenge on Twitch, and Pavel was like, we're gonna do it. We're gonna win on your account. And I was like, okay. And then we didn't.
Oh, that was the thing where you beat, like, all eight... Or beat it with all nine classes, like, in the... Or beat it with as many classes without losing. I don't remember. Yeah, there was some kind of Twitch thing.
Yeah, it was, you had to beat it with the least amount of runs... Like, you have to beat it without, like, having to try, like, multiple times, basically. Like, clear it on the first time for each class.
People creating, like, several fresh accounts just to do this, right? As I recall.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Those things are probably really... Like, if you didn't care about your reputation, because, like, to get paid, I'm assuming you have to give them all your information, and they could probably connect dots. But if you really just didn't care about your reputation, you could probably easily manipulate these kind of things.
Oh, no, I don't think... I think this was, like, within the rules. I think that was, like, the way they let you do multiple runs. I remember, like, Trump even streaming, like, himself, like, unlocking like four new accounts at the same time or something like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The thing that I thought there was in the requirements is just you had to stream the whole thing. That was the one requirement that I remember that was like,
I mean, that makes sense. It's a Twitch thing. That makes sense. That you have to stream it. But the second thing that was in the news this week, which is probably the biggest piece of Blizzard news that we've had in a quick minute, and that's HGC being cancelled. HGC is the Heroes of the Storm version of the Hearthstone Championship Tour. What do you know what it stands for?
I think it's Heroes Grand Champion, or Heroes of the Storm Grand Championship, or something.
Okay, that makes sense. So this past week, Blizzard pretty much just, out of the blue, the Heroes players and casters and team owners and everyone involved in that competitive scene were in a similar situation to us Hearthstone people, where we're just getting cold-shouldered about the new season. The date comes where they're supposed to announce what's happening in 2019. Obviously, they miss it. Nobody knows what's going on. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, everybody finds out at the same time, all the team owners, all the players, that without any forewarning, they just get the blog post treatment where you see Heroes of the Storm posted a blog post, and then you go and read it, and you're like, huh.
Post that start with thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, but get wrecked. Yeah. Your scene is now canceled, and that's exactly what happened. Blizzard canceled Heroes of the Storm esports.
Yeah, I've heard even some of the like team internally was surprised by the news, but that's, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess, you know, from, I actually followed HGC quite a bit. You know, I used to play Hearthstone kind of before I got back into Hearthstone, and, you know, the game never kind of really took off in popularity, but HGC, I would say comparatively, you know, it was expensive, I'm sure, to run, but, I think HGC's, like, the numbers were, you know, compared to how popular Heroes is, were quite a bit better than how well HGT has done, in comparison to Hearthstone. You know, HGC would regularly get 10 to 20k viewers, like, 3 days a week on, like, a weekly basis in the league, and I thought the production quality was pretty good, too. You know, I kept watching even after I kind of stopped playing HOTS.
Yeah, and just pretty much what you mean by that is, like, Hearthstone has, I think, they always celebrate the milestone. I think the last one might have been, like, I don't know, maybe it was, like, 30 million players or some crazy number of, like, people
It was like 70 million during like Angora. Like,
I thought it was 90 at one point. Like,
I think we might even be close to 100.
All right, let's call it 100 million. Yeah. Let's say 100 million people are playing Hearthstone. And then we have Hearthstone getting 20k viewers for HCT with 100 million people playing, and then you have Heroes who probably has 100,000 people playing the game. I don't know,
well,
actually.
I mean, if you're comparing that, that's not totally apples to apples, but yeah, you're probably, like, logged in concurrently, you know, is probably less than that, you know.
Yeah, let's just say a million. Just, it's, and they're getting 10 to 20,000 viewers as well. So, that's, I'm assuming that's the, what you're trying to, like.
Yeah, like, I'm saying, like, comparatively, like, they're, you know, their esports broadcast probably got better numbers, you know, compared to
For the amount of people that play.
Percentage wise, yeah,
like quite a bit better, not like a little bit better, you know, not like, you know, obviously it's easier to get a better number on a smaller denominator to a certain extent.
I think a huge part of that is that they promote it. Like, I think Heroes of the Storm and Overwatch both have esports attached to their something in game. Like, Overwatch has the skins, and even on the launcher, when you play Overwatch, it, like, tells you that there's tournaments going on and whatnot, whereas Hearthstone, you would never know that there's an esports scene, there's nothing.
Yeah.
I think that helps a lot, like, don't get me wrong, and I think, but, like, there's also all kinds of other support things that I think HGC did well that, for whatever reason, we've never gotten in Hearthstone. Like, there's an actual, like, esports page with relevant information, like the league standings, like, you know, The league standings are updated like during the matches. You know, there's also a consistent schedule for it, which I think helps a lot. And then
I think that's big.
And
yeah.
Then I think the production quality, just on average, is, you know, because it's kind of not left event by event, tends to be quite a bit higher, in my opinion, on average. You know, like the casters are in studio. You know, even though the players are kind of distributed around because they're not flying out somewhere every week, I think just the average production quality tends to be quite a bit better. You know, there's way less downtime. You don't get these like 30-minute, you know, between round things going on.
Right. I don't know if it's just because Blizzard lets third parties have so much control over Hearthstone's competitive environment. Like, if Blizzard did every single tournament like they do HCT, would it be significantly different? And is HCT that significantly different from a standard tour stop?
I think the stuff that, like, if you look at the fall champs or, like, summer champs, and you look at the stuff they do in studio for Hearthstone, it tends to be a little bit more smoothly run, like, a lot less downtime, better filler content. Doesn't just say, we'll be back in 15 minutes, which is, like, death of viewership, where it's like, oh, okay, well, that means I'm just going to leave now. And then if you're not hooked on watching the Hearthstone event, you're going to leave because there's no content for 15 minutes.
Yeah. HGC also has that thing where they like bounce, like they have like four games that they can spectate at once.
HGC doesn't have that. No, the HGC, like the schedule is like one at a time. They'll go over the previous game because there's replays in that game, so they can kind of bring up some information from it, or they'll bring up picture in picture. Just like there's no filler content in a lot of Hearthstone tournaments other than like ads for things. I mean, there's a lot of ads in HGC for like, you know, other Blizzard stuff too, but
No, I meant HTC, like Hearthstone, watching play.
Saying, like, yeah, so like HTC has this great filler content because they can bring up replays, they can kind of like do the play-by-play breakdown, whereas they tend to do a lot less than the Hearthstone events. It just requires a lot more production support, where like, oh, bring up the video of what went on, right? Because there's no in-game replays for Hearthstone, so you can't be like, oh, let's go quickly go through this key moment in the game that we found, or like, you know, kind of in clients, like less native.
Yeah, I think it's also just like, for Hearthstone, it's harder to find super hype moments in games that audiences can relate to. Or at least that's what it seems like. Like, if you're watching, for instance, this weekend I watched Super Smash Bros., you can easily get a highlight reel out of any single game of Super Smash Bros.
Yeah, right? I agree. I agree with that to a certain extent. But I mean, I kind of feel like sometimes I wonder, like, with the replay functionality kind of missing in Hearthstone, it makes it a lot harder to do that, because you'd have a whole trove of games you could potentially go through to find those hype moments, you know, if you had replays.
Right.
You know, or like someone got down to one life, right, and then stabilized. You know, you could do hype over like not just an instant, like not just be a play, but over just what happened over the course of the game. It's like, oh, you almost died. It was one damage off lethal, or, you know, I don't know. It doesn't need to be the things that are most interesting to pro players even necessarily, but just like create this, drama within the game.
Show a rag shot or something.
That probably required a tournament right? client of some type, and you know, we just never want to get our hopes up about that one.
Hey, with the change of the format and everything, it's more likely they're going to have a tournament mode actually
never
put in,
happening.
Which is, it might happen.
Every piece of information I have and I have heard is that nothing about esports drives game development for Hearthstone. Like, there's no one's like in esports like, we need this feature from the game dev team. They're more like, take this game and turn it into an esport. And like, well, we need certain things to help. They're like, no, this is the game you're working with.
Okay, so...
Oh, wow.
They're just not getting help from the developers, basically.
I mean, right, like, it makes a certain amount of sense, right? They want to make the game wants to make as popular a game as they can. And I can kind of go into this more, but the esports are there to promote and market the game, right? And that's the only role they serve. So if they have to change the game for esports, then esports kind of isn't serving that role. I mean, I think making smaller changes would make a lot of sense, and I think tournaments would be an enjoyable play mode for lots of players. But
I think maybe with this HGC cancellation and Heroes, just most likely, in all honesty, it's probably just going to die off and just, I don't know, be a failed project for Blizzard, which I don't know if they've ever had something like that before, but maybe Diablo. I don't know. Apparently, people got like super salty about like Diablo 3 or something. I don't know.
But Diablo 3 managed to recover from that. I actually kind of stopped playing before that, but I've heard a lot of people who enjoyed it when they made more dramatic changes. I would say the closest I can think of, like, I can't think of any launch games that really kind of died on the vine like that. I was thinking like there were some rumors forever ago of like StarCraft Ghosts, which is supposed to be like a first person shooter, where you were like a ghost from StarCraft, and I think had a pretty serious announcement around it, and just basically never happened, as far as I recall. But I could be misremembering the details on that.
but games that have been out, that have officially released. I don't think there's been any Blizzard title that is actually just, or they've just kind of given up on it, which is honestly what this feels like for Heroes of the Storm. It feels like, yeah, this isn't working out.
Yeah, I mean,
we're done here.
I enjoyed the game, but if you look at how successful it was, it probably would have been way less successful if it wasn't built on top of already existing Blizzard IP. So it really didn't work out, right? You see these games that are not the most fun, but then they're built on top of really popular intellectual property, so they're everyone goes out to buy them. They could probably release Pokemon anything, or the Diablo game they announced is gonna be the perfect example of that, right? Where it's a Diablo game and it's has Diablo characters, but it's just a reskin of a game and for mobile,
right?
But it's Diablo, so it's gonna probably do fairly well. Super Mario Run would be an example of this too, where it's it's Nintendo, really rarely used IP, but Super Mario Run's the most original and fun game. I mean, I enjoyed playing it because it was Mario, but it's not a great game.
Yeah, I'm just hoping that the people and the resources that were dedicated to Heroes end up going to Hearthstone, or I have a bad feeling it's just gonna somehow funnel into Overwatch, because that just seems like a huge...
It's not even just that, I think, in my head, though. It's that, it doesn't really work that way in practice. It's unless, of course, you have a really clear... if you have a really clear plan of what you want to do, then oftentimes you don't really need that many more people to get it done. And if you don't know exactly what you want to do, throwing infinitely more people at it, it's not gonna solve that problem.
I don't know, I just hope that, maybe at the very least... the money that they don't have to spend on the production and all that for Heroes somehow improves the production from Hearthstone, because now they have more money to hire more production people or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I get the sense from the esports side, that's really what they're going for with what they've announced for next year, is that because they're having fewer events, they're hoping, they're hoping to be able to up the production game for them and kind of create more hype around them.
Yeah,
I don't know if that really solves the logistical challenges of a Hearthstone tournament, but especially a large Hearthstone tournament. But.
I mean, they announced that they're going to be using third parties, so
I'm talking about for the three big events. I'm assuming the cups aren't really going to be streamed.
Oh no! I know that. I mean, for the big events, I feel like they're still going to use the third parties, because even for HTC, they still use Battlefy and stuff like that. HTC is run on Battlefy.
Yeah, well, I know what you're saying, but I'm more talking about just the events themselves. The challenge, I mean, obviously there's challenges as a player too. I appreciate of using these, using Battlefy, using Smash, using whatever, and kind of how that ends up flowing into a tournament. But you just have, if you have a large tournament with, let's say, 200 people, and you have a Swiss, it just takes a lot of time. The rounds finish really evenly, how do you plan streaming games? There's going to be, there's a lot of production challenges that I think come with that. Yeah. They can obviously produce more filler content because it's a bigger single event they're preparing for, but still challenging.
I mean, hopefully they just have it where they're just very quick about certain things. Say there's a Control Warrior Mirror that's going on for a while, just hopping into that game, having everybody have Spectate open, and then just hopping into that game to see where it's at and checking on it. You know what I mean? Just not doing nothing, or just having people do Talkstone for way too long, or see the same video of Rosti explaining something that nobody cares about.
You see, if you send all the minions' face, it's lethal.
Oh man, I would that's what I'm really looking forward to next month when I go to HTC, is how many times I'm gonna have to listen to Rosti explain to me something that I do not care about. Oh man. But as a team owner, these 2019 changes that we've already discussed this on the podcast a little bit, or quite a bit actually at this point, about what's actually been announced, in that there's going to be no ladder counting, no point system as of right now. It's more like a tournament qualification that feeds into another tournament that eventually feeds into something bigger, etc., etc., and less tour stops. So, how does that affect you as a team owner?
It's really challenging for us. I mean, one of the biggest challenges is just this unexpected huge break in time, right? We were expecting that December 1st we'd be on the start of season 1 2019. That's what was released on their calendar when they released the 2018 schedule, and we tried to get information out of them, and Blizzard kind of ghosted us whenever we'd ask about next year information.
That's one of the things that I just don't like about how Blizzard has been acting on this. At least they could be a little bit more front going with everything, and telling everyone, hey, here's what our plan is. But it seems like they're waiting until after the last minute to do all this. sucks. Yeah. And they're like,
yeah, I mean, there's no way they planned on 2019 going normally when they didn't have a plan announced 5 days left, right? Like, whatever they had, it wasn't finalized, right? So, and they could have, yeah. You know, the thing that I kind of view, and I, you know, the same thing kind of with this HGC thing, right? It's like, so I think I saw some estimates that HGC cost them $7 million a year to run. That's definitely a lot of money, you know. We're talking about in the scope of Activision and, you know, Blizzard. You know, that's, I'm not saying they should waste that amount of money, but it's not so much that they couldn't have done something right for the community, you know, downsized it, created something that lasted 6 months, kind of tied it over and not had it be the sudden announcement. You know, you have to make big decisions sometimes, but yeah, the communication and kind of the way it's done, like, it's almost like they don't care about building trust with the community that exists, right? Because, you know, even from, you know, there's just, you know, Hearthstone Esports too, the communication is just atrocious. You know, I don't think, like, almost half of the announcements I think that we get from Blizzard about Hearthstone Esports is apologies for failure to communications, for failed communication, like, after an incident's kind of gone too far. But never, like, the normal communications that you'd kind of expect to, like, how things are going or, like, you know. I would say, like, a lot of information we've gotten this past year is random interviews with, like, Jay, you know.
Yeah.
Like, posts on other sites.
The weird thing about that is that I don't know, like, I don't think that there's anything people like Che can do about it. Like, I don't know this for a fact, but, like, I'm assuming that everybody on that esports team is not allowed to talk about what their plans are in any capacity. Like, it's not their, it's not, like, the individual's fault that the communication is so poor. It's probably Activision. Or, like, it probably goes much higher up the ladder. And I think a lot of it, like JR was talking about previously, is just, like, Mike Morhaime leaving and Activision just taking over. Like, all the people who were originally the founders of Blizzard are no longer there anymore. And Mike was the only one who actually cared about esports. He probably didn't mind losing $1 million if it meant building a better experience for the community and gaining that trust. Like, he would be okay with taking that hit on some level.
It's so weird though, right? Because, like, you're Blizzard, you're an established brand. Like, a new Blizzard, like, Blizzard announced a brand new game tomorrow with new characters. I think a lot of people would go out and buy it because they're like, I've been trusting, I've been playing Blizzard game for 20 years, you know, like, I want to try this. And the part of that is the kind of the trust, the sense of community, kind of like the good feelings you have towards Blizzard and them having done a good job. And, like, you know, these things that are really, like, I'm not saying they need to keep HGC going forever or even, like, you know, maybe canceling it was the right thing to do, but make the, like, grown-up decision to cancel it 4 months ago so people can make plans, you know, like, the community can kind of, like, rally behind it or give the opportunity to run, you know, for them to run, have more control over their events, you know, kind of, there's different ways.
Have a goodbye tour, like, or something. Yeah.
You know,
they could have done a lot more graciously. They went in and they did it very haphazardly, very, oh yeah, we hit our deadline, we can't do it, bye guys.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure some of these decisions were made late, but, like, they should instead, like, if you're like, oh, we're making these really late, it will be better. I mean, I think, like, it's not even self-interested for them to do exactly what they did, in my opinion. Like, it's not like, I'm not trying to make the argument, it's like, oh, it would have been really nice if they did this. I think in the long term, it's going to harm them, right? There's people who feel really burned by this. You know, look at what Scythe Esports, the only owner's been, you know, obviously, me and Insom have posted stuff on Twitter, but, like, look at what Scythe Esports, he had just had a team qualify for HGC next year, and last minute announcement, oh, by the way, you're not HGC.
Mm.
Or, like, there's no HGC that you qualified for. Like, they spent, you know, they had to qualify through an open division, they had to play a Crucible match to qualify into it, and just yanked away from them, right? Like, the same thing with Hearthstone, like, lots of players were trying to make all these plans for next year, teams were signing players, right? Like, look, I don't know what Blizzard was talking to Philadelphia, but Philadelphia got into this. As far as I know, there's no team league, there's no HGC until April, like, they sign players. This is a company that already has a lot of trust in Blizzard, right? Where they run, like, the Philadelphia Overwatch League team. And, yeah, probably to them it's not gigantic, but still, it's a big deal, right? Like, there's no, like, even, like, they signed competitive players. You know, competitive players can stream, but, like, the exciting thing about signing competitive players is they're going to have results, and they can't have any results until April. And then the system is not, you know, in my mind, not really designed to reward consistency. We haven't seen all the details yet, but I don't think, like, open cups into, like, one giant, you know, tournament where you have to top is going to regularly highlight the best players. You know? And it's just like an individual tour stop doesn't always have the absolute best players win. It has players who performed well that weekend and got a little bit lucky, you know, a combination of the two. But over the course of a season of earning points, you start to close in on, like, the best players being, you know, highlighted more consistently.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think this new system is going to reward content creators, and we see that with the way that they choose who they decide to, like, promote, right? Like, they haven't ever promoted a competitive player, truly, I don't think, besides Firebat. But, like, on the launcher and stuff, they kind of used to before when they had their old community manager, like, when people like Savich's wife were community manager and stuff like that, like, a long time ago. But with, like, the new direction, the new people that they're hiring, they're favoring people who are big streamers and people who aren't really competitors. And now, if the league is mostly consistent of content creators and stuff like that, I think that that's just the route that they're pushing it. But hopefully, they also somehow reward their competitive players.
Yeah, I mean, the challenging thing, like, looking at it from my perspective, too, like, as a team owner, is, like, how, you know, obviously there's this Premier League, so having a player in that, I'm sure, will be great for the people who get invited to that. But then, what do you do for these other events? Because I just don't think, like, you know, the rumors we've heard about the format, you know, I did get a chance to talk to MilkFat a bit, and, like, they're really sold on these smaller number of deck formats because they think players, you know, more casual players who watch, want, you know, don't like to see them having, like, five decks when they can't afford five decks. I don't know. I mean, I can't necessarily fully empathize with that experience. I don't know what it's like. It feels a little bit of a strange complaint to me. I think there's a lot of accessibility issues that comes to watching a Hearthstone broadcast, but I think a lot of that's because we have these, you know, they're not set up to tell stories, and I think the system next year honestly seems worse to me outside of the Premier League for telling stories. Like, they're just going all in on the Premier League and trying to, like, minimize the players who are outside of that, and if they invite streamers, that's going to really make it almost impossible for anyone else to kind of get into that top tier.
Yeah, there was a comparison that JR made comparing it to how the previous league currently looks like the NFL, and this is turning more into something like WWE, where it's like you're losing the aspect of competitiveness from the game. You're really just doing it as, like, a showcase type thing.
Well, you know, like, I guess, here's where I'm kind of, like, torn on this. I actually like the idea of a Premier League. You know, I think where I'm struggling with the format is obviously inviting streamers just is not healthy for competitive integrity. And I'm not saying, like, the streamers are cheaters. I didn't mean that sense of competitive integrity, but it just means, like, you're not being rewarded for the results of your play. And then the rumors we've heard about the qualification system also don't seem like they particularly reward any form of consistency. You know, obviously better players will qualify on average to the final event, but, like, it kind of depends on the format. And if we're talking about one deck formats or even two deck formats, three deck formats, like, it's really tough to show your skill over a small number of events. And
yeah.
And, like, that, and right, and, like, remember, like, you know, people talk about pro Hearthstone. There are very few professional Hearthstone players. So you're going to dedicate a lot of time getting better at this, which I think is something people don't appreciate when they talk about, like, ladder grinding. A lot of ladder grinding is also getting better at the game, you know? Like, people play a lot, they get better. It's just, you know, I also would prefer to be really fast without running a lot, but that's how you get faster.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like a lot of those people who put in the time to ladder grind and stuff just, I don't want to say get slapped in the face, but, like, it's no longer rewarding to just, like, be good at the game. Like, now you also have to get lucky in these tournaments, even though being good is going to help you, but since it's a smaller sample size, it just makes it more difficult.
Yeah, this detracts away from the players who were more a volume type of player, someone who's going to grind out thousands upon thousands of games, as opposed to the person who's going to go through and just choose more or less just be correct, as opposed to just the constant grind.
I don't know that, like, rewards one style of player over another, but I just don't know that, like, over the sample size that we're talking about having, that, like, you'll even be able, like, right, Hearthstone is not like StarCraft, right? Like, StarCraft, you know, if I went up against, you know, if I went against Serral, I will lose 100% of my games against him. You know, even someone close is going to, you know, he's dominant enough that he's going to win, like, 70% of their games against them. But, like, I can go up against, you know, Muzzy Hunter Ace, and, like, in the right matchups, I can still win, like, my fair share of games. You know, they might beat me 5-10% more often than, like, the matchup spread shows on HS Replay, or maybe even higher for some matchups. But they're not going to, like, shut me out, like, 90-10 or anything like that. It's Hearthstone, you know? I've beaten really good players in Hearthstone. It's, you know, it's a card game. It's different mechanics. So this is where, like, this kind of fully open logic doesn't really make as much sense. That's why I kind of like the Premier League. I think if you've created the separation through results, I think it makes sense to kind of have a tier, you know, Premier League. Like, maybe you have to do something to kind of maintain yourself in there, but then also have, like, a clearer way to earn yourself in there rather than just an open division. Like, why should the 17th player who just barely gets left out of this thing go through the exact same process as everyone else. You know, yes, they've talked about these automatic qualifiers and these big tournaments. We don't even know what the process is there. I mean, probably Blizzard doesn't know what the process is there yet because this looks like a last minute thing. But, you know, like the fact that someone who's never hit Legend is going to go into the same tournament as someone who finished with, like, you know, 100 HCT points last year. I don't know. That doesn't seem quite right to me. Like, it seems like, right, like, some, like, one way of rewarding consistency would be have an easier qualification path for people who have had stronger results in the past, you know? Maybe...
Yeah, like, get them seated.
Or, like, a satellite tier, right? Where maybe you can't even play in the direct qualifier. You have to play in an indirect qualifier first. You know, like, you have to play in the satellite tournament first to get into the qualifier, unless, of course, you've had a certain number of points. Or, you know, or maybe you, maybe once you unlock this, like, you know, you win a satellite, you can permanently play in, like, the direct qualifiers. But, you know... I think the, like, vision and experience, like, feel really different. You know, playing these, like, open qualifiers for the online and offline, I mean, that was trying to do an open system. I really liked the online and offline, you know, I think as a, you know, at, compared to the previous year, but they were grueling qualifiers, you know. They would...
Yeah.
If you went through the losers bracket, they were, like, you know, 12-plus hour tournaments. And, you know, it's on...
It was getting, like, I played in, I played in one of them, and I got third, and it was... over 15 hours. It was awful. Like, I was like,
and we're not talking about 15 hours over the weekend, right? We're talking about 15 hours straight, like.
Yes, yeah, like in one sitting, which is I don't even know if it would be worse if it was like I was actually playing, because I feel like it would be more engaging if I was playing the whole time. It's like you start off 4-0 and then you have to wait 5 hours for your losers match, and you can't really go and do anything because you don't actually know when you're gonna play.
Yeah,
because it could be any time.
Yeah, I mean, and then they had some of these ones where it's like a race to sign up because they only have like 128 spots, right? Like this mix is so weird. Whereas, like, if they had 128 spots but they were like basically mostly like the 100 best players in the world, then you're like, oh, okay, like, you know, they earned this somehow, right? And I think that's like where they want to have this very open system that like really anyone can win. And I don't think this anyone can win is going to be a way to demonstrate players. Some players are better than others, you know?
What do you think if they had a system where the players who had X number of points were able to bypass certain steps of the process? Like,
I mean, that's kind of what they have. They just need more layers of that, right? Because they have, like, the players with, you know, 120, 150 points get, like, one or two or three auto invites to the, you know, to, like, the three big events they announce, mega tour stops or whatever they're called. And that's kind of what they were going for, but there's nothing below that, right? And the difference between a player who had 100 points last year, you know, and me is gigantic. And let alone me, right, and someone who doesn't regularly hit Legend, you know, like there's several layers. And I think, you know, it feels exclusive and like kind of like elitist in a certain way, but like also people have earned these results. It's not like these aren't gifted to them from like owning more cards. You have to work really hard to get these results. They're hard, you know.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. That I do really hope that they don't invite streamers or anything to any of this stuff, even though that might sound stupid, because I know that streamers and stuff get viewers, but it just feels so pointless to be a competitive player if you don't get anything for it, unless you're literally top whatever. It wouldn't even be top 16 at that point. It, like, what I saw, it would be, like, 4 spots.
Yeah, I mean, it's really tough to imagine. Like, it's weird because I don't even know if that's a successful system. Like, I get why they want to do that. It's kind of like a risk-averse decision. You're like, we're worried about not getting viewers. Like, you know, we know when Dog streams alongside an HCT event, Dog gets just as many viewers. If you're watching Philadelphia this weekend, you were scrolling through Hearthstone, I think Dog had, like, 10,000 and Philadelphia was getting 12,000, you know? And so you're like, well, now we're competing against that for our event. But at the same time, and, you know, Dog's probably one of the stronger streamers. You know, there's some, like, much more casual streamers who are not regularly playoff, you know, qualifiers. I'm not trying to, like, name names. It's a kind of very different thing. You're like, well, what exactly is this person providing here other than, like, viewers? But from their perspective, they're like, well, the challenge we have to selling this to our higher-ups is we're not getting enough viewers. The only way to guarantee viewers is we're basically bootstrapping off of popular names. I'm not even sure if that content is that enjoyable. Like, do people, like, I don't think people want to watch, you know, people watch Disguised Toast because he's an entertaining streamer. They don't want to watch him be quiet in front of a computer monitor during a match. Like, that's not why people watch Toast, you know.
I think that they could, I feel like other games have done this where, like, they do something with their popular streamers where, like, they have their popular streamers pretty much host the tournament, and they just pay the streamers.
Being like a caster.
Yeah, I'm sure they would get viewers from that, but, like, my point is, like, those, like, the thing that makes, you know, these, you know, popular streamers who are not top players popular streamers is that they're entertaining. It's like they're not going there for the top Hearthstone play.
Oh, no. I mean, like, you not casting, not playing. I mean, you literally say to your top influencer, like, you go to Disguised Toast, you say, we are doing HCT at this time. We want you to stream before HCT, and then once we start, we want you to host us, and we're going to pay you money.
No, I get that, but, like, my point is, why do these people need to be playing? I mean, I get if they want to be playing the event to agree to this, but, like, them playing the event is not the most entertaining content, like Hearthstone.
Oh, no, I'm not saying they play. Yeah. I'm not even implying that they play.
Oh, I'm just assuming that they are playing based on every kind of, you know, rumor we've heard, you know. I saw.
Oh, yeah, based off of, like, what's probably going to happen.
Well, and also,
yeah.
Like, if you look at the official announcement, they said, like, oh, some of the best players from the past, you know, it's like, what does that mean? Like, you know, like, I mean, I don't think it just means they're inviting Firebat and, like, Oskaka back, right? I think it means, like, an excuse for, like, not the best players currently.
For know? Them to bring,
and
for them to bring Crypt back against Arctosis.
The written version of it was, like, you know, compelling players. Like, the best and most compelling players. Like, well, are the best players not the most compelling players? Because I think that's implied from this statement.
I guess we're
talking about team owner stuff. The other thing that I failed to mention that I think was a huge, huge disappointment and I've heard is definitely not happening next year is a team league. I think hopefully they changed their mind and just maybe beg in my face, but I've heard directly there's no plans for a team league for 2019. And I think huge mistake. Trinity Series was really popular and it would give teams a role. It would, you know, get something for people to be excited about. And the content was just great, you know, and like that would be a mix of the best players and entertaining. And, you know, you could have a lot more room for streamers in that type of format because they wouldn't be dominating the skill of the event and the skill would still be determined by the best teams who qualified into this or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, last year I heard that there was going to be a team league. Like around this time, maybe it was even earlier. Like that is something that they were planning on doing with something like Trinity Series, and then for some reason it just fell through. It just completely never happened. But through talks with certain Blizzard people, it just seems like they have these visions that they're really confident in and very excited about that they share with people, and then 90% of the time it doesn't happen and people are just sad. And it's also very interesting to me who they decide to tell, because you obviously know that they didn't tell you guys about these announcements, but there were rumors because Ahiron tweeted it, and those rumors did not come from nowhere, right? They came from people like telling, like a game of telephone, right? Like you used to play in like elementary school or whatever, where somebody tells somebody who tells somebody, yeah, blah blah blah.
So I talked to you know, I can't pronounce his name, Sam Braithwaite or, you know, Milkbat, and he basically said like for better or for worse, they weren't talking it. They really weren't talking teams. These leaks were coming in directly. You know, it's like I also wasn't sure, like, am I happy that you're not talking to teams, or am I glad that you're not talking to teams? Because teams are stakeholders in this whole thing, so shouldn't you be talking to them? But also you're not telling us anything, which makes me upset, you know, so it's a mixed bag. Like, I get the sense that they really were not talking to anybody. Like, there were leaks going out to players, but I don't think this was, like, a feedback system. They weren't, like, going to, say, in Muzzy Hunter Ace, but, like, here's what we're thinking for next year, here's what you should do. No, like, they were making decisions, and they were getting leaked to those players at all, you know. And
yeah,
and that's incredibly disappointing to hear too, because right, like, yes, like even the people in the Premier League don't even know if they're happy about the Premier League or not, because they don't know if they're in, right? We don't, like, as far as I know, there are no guarantees for anyone, you know. I mean, I think we can assume that the 3-star masters are going to be in because they're going to be like almost unjustifiable not to put them in, and they're popular enough, as you know, just from their raw play they'll get in there. But I don't know, if I was a 2-star master, I would not be banking on anything. They haven't promised you anything, you know.
Yeah, that's super scary for people, especially I don't know, they just made up this new tier of master like recently that was like 120 points, and they're like, oh, by the way, we extended the qualification period for masters by like an extra couple months, so now this one tournament that you didn't sign up for and is already full and that you can no longer sign up for, like,
yeah, you know what, what did they have to do, what did they do, and what could they have done afterwards? It's like, so even when they finally made their announcements, there was no like apology for not making an announcement, like no kind of like, you know we kind of had to make some difficult decisions. They were just like, it's exciting, 2019, by the way, there's a tour stop in 2 days that you should have gone to if you're like one of these 20 players, you know, like
I felt real bad because people like Cydonia were in that position where if they got top 16 in Philadelphia, all of a sudden they're getting the new tier of Master, which was like 120 points that they just came up with like a couple weeks ago. And at that point, HCT Philadelphia was already full. You couldn't sign up.
Oh, yeah, and of course, only 88 people ended up showing up to Philadelphia out of the 128 spots they were capped at, because they didn't require you to pay anything to sign up, and all they sent was like an email like, are you really playing? And, you know, like, I had signed up, and I was pretty sure I was going to play, and then they kind of like canceled things. I was like, okay, I'm not going. I managed to give away my spot to someone who needed to go there, kind of like, but like, it wasn't clear it was off the wait list or how it was working. And I, you know,
I tried to give up my spot. Like, I knew, like, once I got sick and I figured out I couldn't go, even though it was only like a day's notice, I was talking to Cydonia because he was like super sad that like he was still waitlisted, but he was ready to pull the trigger. And I tried to communicate that, and they just couldn't, like, it was just too late.
I mean, I just think, like there have been issues with other tour stops, too, where you can sign up without having to, like, commit in any way to it. Like, they could have, even if they just charged the $15 door charge, you know, that they charge for the event when you were signing up, that would have been enough to discourage people from just signing up willy-nilly, you know, who weren't intending on going.
And yeah, it's super awkward that there were so many people on the wait list.
I think some of it has to do with, I don't know if this is exactly why, but I know there are some state regulations around, like, charging entry fees for, like, games of chance, and, like, I don't know, like, how Hearthstone falls into this. You know, like, some, you can't have, like, a poker tournament in some states, because, you know, whereas, like, some states where even gambling is illegal, you can still have a poker tournament because it's just, like, signing up for a competition or something. Although, it's kind of weird. I've played chess tournaments in Philadelphia before. Obviously, chess is not, like, a game of chance in that same sense, but, you know, so.
I just think that they could have handled, and again, this is a third party, though, so it's not even Blizzard at that point.
But, like, but this was also an issue for, like, that, you know, for, that they would always have for
multiple other things.
For every single one of these online to offline qualifiers where there'd be like, you'd be 600 out of 500, you know, you were pretty sure you were going to get in. But just like, there was not, you know, players didn't even have to put like a dollar or like even prove that they were like had a real Blizzard account to like sign up for these things. And then sure enough, you get off the wait list, but just, it's impossible to make your, you know, plan your life around this. It's like, if Hearthstone, you know, is 100% of what you do, then maybe you can pull this off, but it's very hard even for, you know, I mean, if we're honest about it, right? Professional Hearthstone players, there are no professional, there are very few true professional Hearthstone players who make all of their living and are like adults, you know, like fending for themselves off Hearthstone. There are a few people, but they're rare, right? There are a lot more what I would say put in the class of Hearthstone professionals who make their living in the Hearthstone ecosystem, you know, because they're really popular streamers or a mix of streaming competitive, you know, or they have
Panda supporting them as I feel like a charity case at this point.
Yeah, my point is like this is a rare case, and even then, if this wasn't something you really felt passionate about, you probably have other opportunities that would be more profitable to you. You know, maybe less enjoyable, but, you know, still other opportunities. And I think, like, you know, Blizzard likes to advertise this idea of a pro Hearthstone player, and I don't think they know. I feel like they misuse that term in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because, like, you can't brand it as anything else, though, because you have all these other esports that are already established, and you can't really you can't stray from the mold, right? Like, especially when you have Overwatch. Like, the reason why professional Overwatch players are professional Overwatch players is because they're in the Overwatch League getting a salary of X amount that Blizzard pays. And there is no real way to, like, tell who's a professional Heart. Like, everybody is a professional Hearthstone player now.
Literally,
like,
if you show up to an event,
there's no distinguishing factor.
It's like, if you watch, like, the Twitch chat and stream, like, everyone who's on stream is a professional Hearthstone player.
Yes, like, you don't actually know who's a professional Hearthstone player. Yeah. Like, you could have people who don't do anything with their lives that don't actually make money off of Hearthstone but still claim they're professional Hearthstone players because that's all they do.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, there's a second tier of professional Hearthstone player, which is, like, do you get paid by, like, a team as a sponsor any amount of money to play Hearthstone? In some sense, you're getting paid to play Hearthstone. That makes you, like, a pro in some sense. But it's not, like, it is not your profession. You know? I guess there's, like, that.
Yeah. It's very arbitrary. Like, it's really just vague what a professional Hearthstone player is right now, because there is no nobody's getting paid
in any way. I mean, and that could be one of the upsides of, like, the changes for next year that I think are, like, really interesting. But I think, like, if all they're doing is paying already the few people who are already making a lot of money in Hearthstone more money to show up, you know, some of whom definitely have not earned a distinction of being top players, I think it's going to be disappointing to people who care about competition.
Yeah, I would say actually Master tier is the closest. Like, whoever is Master tier, well, although it doesn't matter now because they're taking it away, like, whoever was Master tier theoretically was supposed to get X amount of money every 3 months, right? So that's the closest thing you'd have to, like, consistent income
the lack of consistency around like their plans from year to year is, I mean, if they look at like, I mean, you know, one of the struggles as a team owner, right, is also just planning year to year. It's like, well, okay, when we want our sponsors, what do we want to offer them? What do we want to get? Well, it's like we can't even tell them what's going on next year. We can't promise them it's going to look anything the same as it did last year, you know.
Yeah, teams who rely on Hearthstone, like you guys, right. Like Panda Global is completely...
And they want teams to be involved in Hearthstone. Yeah. It's not like they don't have some alternative explanation for this. But the problem they run into is that like they don't know what that really means. Like, you know, like look, there are very few top, you know, like look at top global esports brands. Very few of them are in Hearthstone, and they're in other games.
Yeah,
you know, there are even other Blizzard games, right? Like very few of them are in Hearthstone. A lot, you know, that used to be in have pulled out. I mean, obviously SKT1 is a huge, you know, huge global esports brand. But I'm trying to think of like these super premier that have like Counter-Strike teams who have played in majors or like, you know, at least are well represented in other esports.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I think that a lot of the big teams, like SKT for example, if it wasn't Zixo and Surrender and Hoi, they wouldn't have a heart. Like they're not picking up a Hearthstone team. They're picking up players who they like.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
It's the same thing with me and Panda Global. It's like. They did not. Panda Global does not care about Hearthstone. Hearthstone is not something they even like. They're just like, no, we like they like me and they like Hotmeowth as personalities. They don't actually care about Hearthstone. Hearthstone's not profitable to them. If they had to try to sell the sponsors on Hearthstone, they would not be a successful team. They're a successful team because of Super Smash Brothers and the fighting games that have a consistent schedule and. Prize pools, and they can expect the players to do,
and the consistent results makes a big deal. This is why I think like tiers of players is good. Like the idea of a premier tier, and even like if they could implement, you know, introduce like a platinum tier that had like 50 players, or you know, some kind of strong second tier league. Like I think it would be healthy for it because you could have some more consistency of like these players would be having results, playing in events that were significant on a more regular basis. You know, and it wouldn't just be, you know, because you'd be one of these players who already qualified into these much narrower spots. It would be really good for teams to get involved, and they could provide consistency. They could demonstrate skill by like being in these top leagues, and I just don't think, you know.
Yeah, you can't go up to a sponsor and guarantee X amount of stream time with X amount of viewers or X amount of exposure if you just have competitive Hearthstone players who aren't big streamers, because there's no way to know. Like, even if you have the best player in the world, you can't guarantee a sponsor that they're going to get any stream time at all. Yeah. Like, they could just bomb this tournament. Like, you could go up to a sponsor and be like, this is the best player in the world. He has the most points. And then they go, okay, how much impressions are we going to get? Like, how many people are going to see our logo on his jersey? And you could be like, well, it could be 20,000 people for an hour, or it could be 20,000 people for 4 hours, or it could be zero people for 0 hours. We have no idea. Like, it's very difficult now with no consistency, unless they end up doing something like you said, where they have like a tier two. I don't even want to call it a tier two league because it's probably will have better players than the Premier League, but
or the Challengers League or something like that. You know, like the right, like you know, like they have this in like European soccer, right? They have like the top league and the second league, or I don't know what they call them, but like right, and the teams move up and down between them. Something, I mean, obviously you're gonna need to have more motion than that because it's, you know, it's Hearthstone and people moving out of the game more quickly than that. But I think having some consistency and some reliability is good.
So, as far as the stats stuff goes, do you want to explain like what you do exactly and just kind of give us a background on that and you as a person who is involved in data and all that shenanigans?
Yeah, so you know, I studied computer science in undergrad, and I used to work in finance and trading for a long time, and so I have a lot of experience kind of just doing, you know, simple models and things like this. And then actually a little bit of some of the stuff I've done more recently. Some of my, you know, I played a lot of chess in college, and some computer chess programming knowledge I have kind of is come in handy. And so, you know, I didn't mention this in my background, but I helped the USA HGG team kind of prepare all their drafts, you know, kind of using computer simulations to kind of help model it out. And so, like, stats-wise, I, you know, I have kind of, like, I've seen other people do pretty good models, like modeling Conquest and modeling LHS, and then kind of figuring out how lineups line up against each other. You know, I kind of always assume people are doing like ideal bands, so they can change because people do make mistakes on those things. Then the other thing I do is I collect a lot of data on players. Like I pull in, you know, some people have seen my ELO posts where I can rank players. I don't think it's perfect, but it's pretty good. Just based on like all the offline tour stops we've had this year and playoffs as well. You know, I kind of try to exclude online stuff because I think the average quality of players sometimes that people are facing are too low, and it kind of skews things.
Right. So can you, like, what would somebody who's listening have to do manually to, like, figure out the best lineup, like, that you would give someone? So, like, for you, the people that you work with, you basically have a code, like, what would you call it? Is it, like, code or, like, program?
Yeah, it's, like, so basically, like, I can target a field of decks, right? So, I can take, like, HS replay data and kind of use that as an input, and then, you know, I've done some streams where I've kind of, like, messed around with individual win rates, because, you know, obviously things change a lot in open deck lists, you know, you kind of know what type of druid or what type of warlock you're facing, and, you know, kind of, manipulate the win rates a little bit to kind of be more in line with what I think the true win rates are.
Are you taking like a bunch of popular lineups and just pitting them against each other and seeing who's going to win the simulated event the most?
I kind of just try to like do the best against the field. I mean, it turns out there's like really minor differences in terms of doing best of the field versus top, but like it's a little bit of a fallacy to think like you want to do better against the decks that do well on the field, because you're talking about, you know, a really good lineup wins 55% of the time instead of 50% of the time, which is the average, you know, lineup in the field. So there's still a lot of below average lineups that, you know, win several games because, you know, 0.45 raised to the fourth power is not that much lower than 0.55 raised to the fourth power. It's lower, but it's not zero. You know, these,
right,
they're still winning pretty often. So
like, how would you do that manually? Like, how would somebody, if they wanted to make like a Conquest lineup, like, how should they go about it using stats to just figure it out? Like, if they had HS replay.
Yeah, so like, I can kind of tell you what, like, I did for my prep for, like, Orange County. Like, this was not just, like, a pure computer-generated lineup. So I was looking at lineups. I'm like, okay, what do I think the most popular, like, archetypes are going to be in the field, right? And, like, I kind of really limited it down, right? Like, you're going to see some Odd Warrior, but I'm basically, like, the field has no Odd Warrior. There's not going to be a meaningful amount of it because it was a very risky deck in that meta for Conquest. And then I'm like, okay, there's going to be a lot of Deathrend Hunter. There's going to be a lot of Mallee Druid, you know, like, I'm like, okay, let's kind of build around this fact. And I'm like, I actually thought there was going to be a decent amount of Odd Rogue. I think there wasn't quite as much as I was expecting, but I thought in the lineups that didn't bring Deathrend Hunter, a lot of them would have Odd Rogue. And then I just kind of planned around, like, trying to build my decks kind of around those, you know, target. And then the harder part that kind of, like, you know, if you were just doing this just kind of, like, with a spreadsheet or whatever, was I was like, okay, now let's build these lineups and see which one of these are the hardest to target, you know, which one of these are most vulnerable to being targeted by the decks I think are going to be in the field, right? Like, if I happen to run in the person who's, like, hard-targeting Odd Paladin, so be it. But I just didn't see a lot of, like, I didn't think there was going to be a ton of warriors that were running, like, you know, Warpath and stuff like that. I mean, I did face one in top 8, but, you know, I just didn't think there were going to be a ton of those lineups.
Yeah, that's just how it be sometimes.
I mean, I don't even think that's why I lost that match, but, you know, and then I, like, also tried to, like, really, like, you know, this is a Conquest thing, but I think this is the thing that I've gotten better at as I've gotten better, you know, better as a player and better at preparing for tournaments, which is, like, really focusing your techs around, like, what you're looking at. You know, it can be small things, but, like, if you're like, oh, well, I'm trying to target, you know, Odd Rogue and Deathrend Hunter, well, then tech choice is like, well, do I want to bring two Divine Favors in my Odd Paladin? It's like, well, no, for those matchups, Divine Favors aren't important. So I think one is fine, you know, like, if you've played the Odd Paladin versus, like, you really want to win the matchups you're supposed to, you don't want to go all in on them, but you want to, like, so I'm like, okay, well, versus Odd Rogue, the way they beat you is, like, these double Firefly openings, right? So, well, Acherous Veteran, if you look at the stats, does really well. Like, if you go through HS replay and you sort by, like, drawn win rate, which is the only, like, if you're trying to figure out how a deck does in a, how a card does in a deck, is the only stat you should be looking at. Your drawn win rate for the card, Acherous Veteran performs really strong against Rogue, probably exactly for that reason, because it helps your, you know, 1/1s and 1/2s trade up into 1/2s, you know.
So in HS replay, you can see the individual card win rates against certain archetypes.
You can't see by archetype, you can see by class, so it kind of depends on the meta, how clear.
By class.
You have to kind of use your head a little bit too, like, well, this is good against, you know, is this doing well against Warlock because it's doing good against Zoo, or is it doing good because it's against Evenlock? It can be a little tricky to think about. You know, sometimes you can logically make sense of it because it should still, you know, it's like, use the data. Like, this is always important whenever, especially using data on not gigantic sample sizes. It's like, use the data, but then use your head to, like, make sure it makes sense. Like, if you're like, Doomsayer is really good against, like, Topsy-Turvy OTK Priest, you're like, wait, no, that doesn't make any sense. You know, like, that's probably not true. You know, it's probably something that's wrong with the data or, like, not making sense. But if it's doing well and then, like, you can kind of make sense to you as well, then, like, that should be supported. But if you think it should be really strong and the, you know, stats really aren't supporting it, that's when you should kind of, like, question and test. And I think it's, like, a strong place to kind of look at that approach.
Have you ever seen anything that does the opposite, where there's something that that's counterintuitive that the model shows that does really well, and then you tried it out and it was actually good?
You know, like, when you try to target, like, LHS fields, like, I think Conquest-style lineups do a lot better than people think. Like, I think, you know, Impact did really well, and was it in Oakland? And he just kind of, like,
he did well in multiple tournaments.
No, but Oakland specifically had, like, kind of, like, a three aggro plus druid lineup. Maybe it was even, like, token druid, like, kind of, even though token druid's not really an aggro deck, but, like, it kind of fits that style of lineup. Like, he did pretty well in Oakland with that, and you're like, well, that doesn't seem like an LHS lineup, that seems like a Conquest lineup, you know, where, like, you kind of have decks that have similar matchups. But this is, like, a kind of counterintuitive thing, because people are always thinking, like, counters in LHS. But, right, if a lot of people only have, like, you're right, like, let's say you're doing this, like, rock, paper, scissors style of, like, LHS, where you're, like, control, anti-aggro, you know, you have these anti-control decks, and then you have these aggro decks, right? And you're like, well, aggro beats anti-control beats, you know, anti-aggro, and anti-aggro beats aggro. So you think you're, like, clever, and you're like, okay, bring three, bring, like, two of another one. But then the thing you run into is, like, well, whatever one I bring one of, I'm super vulnerable to whatever that's supposed to be, right? Like, if I only bring one anti-control deck, you know, and there's two things I only brought one of. So then if you, like, work it out, you're like, well, if I just bring aggro, as long as there's not two anti-aggro decks in the lineup, I should win, right? Like, it kind of makes sense. I mean, obviously the matchups are not quite that polarizing all the time. But, like, so I think people, like, overestimate the value of kind of, like, having these counter decks. And I think that's slightly counterintuitive to people, because I think people just naturally kind of go for this, like, counter, like, style of building lineups, and it's very hard to do that, especially with a ban, to, like, make that work successfully, I think.
Right, so if people are going to attend, like, DreamHack and stuff, they'll probably still be Last Hero Standing, instead of trying to go and do stuff that is a little bit probably, like, you're playing some wacky decks if you're doing that kind of strategy. You don't really need to go that deep, you can just bring, like, a good Conquest lineup and...
Yeah, I think if you wanted to build a more, like, balanced lineup to a certain extent, the way to do it would be, like, rock, paper, and just, like, not run any scissors, right? And, like, depend on kind of winning those, like, paper mirrors, you know? If I'm, like, using the metaphor well, like, you know, like, and try to build your paper decks to be really good at the paper mirrors, you know? Or the paper decks.
I mean, if you just bring four aggro decks and they only have two anti-aggro decks, you ban one of them. If you have three high roll one time.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Like, you just sweep.
I mean, obviously it depends on exactly how these matchups look in the current meta, right? Like, obviously, like, if you remember the Pirate Warrior meta, Pirate Warrior was really good. It would win matchups it wasn't supposed to, right? But, you know, if we're looking at the aggro decks right now, like, some of them are really vulnerable to certain decks, you know? But, like, how popular are those decks, right? Like, Odd Paladin's worst matchups are, like, even, you know, Druid, even Warlock, and, like, Warriors with Warpath will, you know, Warpath not very popular, right? You know, and then, like, Druid...
Until I break out my... You know, my new deck.
You know, Druid might be like a 40% matchup with your running two Void Rippers, you know, like, you can make that matchup a little bit better, and then, you know, I think even Warlock, depending on how your tech, like, can be similar range, so it's not, like, impossible to get through those. And that's, like, a person who has, like, several decks that kind of target you, and that kind of depends on them thinking, like, your archetypes are getting more popular. In Conquest, I think, like, the opposite thing happens, which is I think people are overly focused on having too many of the same matchups. You know, the lineup I used in Orange County was kind of like a hybrid lineup. Like, I was surprised that it was looking so well stats-wise, but I had, like, Odd Paladin, Odd Rogue, Shadowwalk Shaman, and Malygos Druid, right? And if you're kind of like, well, there's two aggro decks and kind of two, like, I don't know where you put the other two, like, combo-y control decks, you know? And it just...
Are you saying, like, countering something, like, targeting, like, a specific thing is not necessarily the, like... It's overhyped, basically.
Well, also, like, how much room do you want to let yourself play with, right? Like, if I bring all aggro and I happen to run into a super anti-aggro lineup, I'm just going to lose, you know? Whereas if I only need, like, one or two aggro decks to get through, I have a chance, you know? Especially if they're aggro decks like Odd Paladin and Odd Rogue, they have kind of different matchups against control decks, you know?
There was also, like, a time where people were, like, trying to target Druid super hard, and then you just realized that...
Yeah. The hard target strategy is, like, interesting, right? There were metas where it was like, you know, it was like more interesting. But like the thing about hard targeting is like the deck you're targeting needs to be really popular, and you have to be able to target it fairly well.
Yeah, I mean, that's when people were trying to target Druid. Like, I saw that happen so often, where people like Monsanto like brought like all quest lineups shenanigans to try to target.
I heard that lineup Druid was actually pretty good, and he just like happened not to work out for him there. But yeah, like, I mean, and that was the, like, if that strategy works, that was the tournament for it to work in, because wasn't, like, by the time NA prelims had rolled around for Frozen Throne, it was 100% J-Druid, except for, like, him?
Yeah, it was crazy, like, how much J-Druid there was, but the problem with that was, is just, like, even if it's statistically, like, amazing, like, they can still just draw Wild Growth, Nourish, and get there, like,
yeah. Well, I mean,
just have to lose once.
This was in the Innervate, you know, 5-mana spreading plague meta, so
yeah, it was wild. So what for this meta, what surprised you the most, and what do you think is the best deck
people
to play on ladder?
For ladder, I mean, I haven't been playing that much. Like, I think, like, if you just want like fun, and I think the deck is ultimately strong and rewarding, I think Turvy, like Topsy Turvy Priest, is pretty good. It is a challenging deck to play. Some tips for people who haven't tried it are: save your Shadow Essences and your Witchwood Pipers. You really want your Witchwood Piper to draw your Boar, and you don't know what you need of your Shadow Essence, like, unless you're desperate for AoE. Those are like the two main tips I would have for that deck. But it's like a lot of fun. Playing the combos just kind of satisfying, or at least for me. And the deck seems strong. Like, it doesn't have a lot of like terrible matchups. I haven't, you know, there's not as much Odd Rogue. I feel like that would probably be one of the worst ones. But even then, Mass Hysteria is a tool that, especially a lot of weaker opponents, are not playing around yet. I'm sure at the very top. But if you look at the stats of the deck, like, the stronger, like, the filter you put on it, the better the stats get, like, by significant margins. And also, if you filter, there's this new HS replay filter by, like, number of games people have played with the deck. It jumps, like, 5% once people have played, like, 25 games with the deck.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's interesting.
That scares me, because I know that, well, for me, I'm going to Virginia, so they have computers there, so I don't have to worry about that. But for people who have to bring your own computer, I just, like, I know my laptop wouldn't, I would never have been able to play Topsy Turvy Priest in Philly, because my laptop can't handle it. Like, it's just literally,
you know, I've played it on my phone, and if you don't have to go through multiple taunts, it's quite doable on your phone with some practice. But if you have to go through, like, several Void Lords, you might want to hope you can Psychic Scream an extra turn or something, you know?
You know, if I'm playing a tournament with really high stakes, I don't know if I want to chance that, like, potential, like, I don't even know if my phone could do that. Like, my phone's old. My phone's, like, 2 years old, dude. I don't think I even want to risk that. Man. But, yeah, so Topsy Turvy Priest for you is, like, probably the deck that you would recommend people to
try out if they want
to have a good time.
I mean, there's not a lot of, like, really new archetypes in this meta. Like, everything's kind of existed before, but some things have bumped up in power level. Like, if you remember, Topsy Turvy Priest was, like, popular at the beginning of Boomsday, but, like, Mass Hysteria helped a lot. And I think also some of the meta changes have helped a lot, too. Just because of these, the bump in power level of some of these anti-control decks have kind of pushed, like, aggro even, like, a little bit to a weaker spot. And I think that's left more room for some of these decks.
Yeah, with the meta developing, there really hasn't been much splash. Even from Philadelphia, like, the most interesting thing was Phenom's lineup that included Quest Mage, Shudderwalk Shaman, OTK Paladin, and Mechathune Warlock.
Yeah,
like, that was the most interesting lineup.
And if you looked at his matches, like, Shudderhawk Shaman felt insanely slow compared to those other decks of, like, killing your opponent, right? Like,
But the only new deck is with the OTK Paladin, which did exist before. Like, yeah. That was a surprising lineup, but, like, he's been playing that lineup since before this format. Like, he just happened to spike this one tournament, but he was literally playing that Warlock deck and stuff like that way before.
Oh, that Warlock doesn't have any new cards. He brought the same lineup. He brought the same deck to Atlanta. The other decks all have a few new cards. I mean, OTK Paladin, the timeouts helped a ton for that deck. And then I think, like, the other tools like Shrivala and Flash Heal are also just pretty useful. Just having more cycle in the deck makes it quite a bit more reliable.
There's just nothing surprising besides that. But that didn't surprise me, just because I knew that Phenom was already playing that stuff.
Yeah.
And
I have a feeling too many people were banning his Quest Mage, is my sense. Like, I was surprised at how many people ended up banning his Quest Mage. It, that that deck, I mean, you know, the bananas make it a little more consistent, but you still have to spend time and mana on those. I think people were underestimating how much, you know, Quest Mage beats itself, you know. Even in the Cold Light Oracle days, that deck would beat itself sometimes, so.
No, I definitely agree. I played quite a bit of Quest Mage at the beginning of the format just because I wanted to try out the Buffoon or whatever.
Yeah, my first instinct was to put that onto a Radiant Elemental, but, you know, to each their own. I just wanted free bananas. Yeah.
I built the deck earlier that was like a combo priest that played that.
There's still a few lists. There was a list, Pimbet, who also top 16, had one banana buffoon in his, like, was it like Miracle? I think it was like Miracle Combo Priest or something like that.
Yeah.
But he only ran one of them because he was running, you know, it was kind of to get to the Grave Horrors.
Yeah, which, that's the one that gets cheaper for each spell.
Yeah, it's the new Arcane Giant. Like, it's a 7/8 taunt that gets,
I want to build. Okay, that's my new pet project is to build double buffoon arcane horror priest. That's a
grave horror.
That's what I'm gonna do.
Yeah, but grave, you can call, horror. You can call arcane horror though. Makes sense. Yeah, it just gets cheaper with spells. Everything gets cheaper with spells. It was previously called arcane.
Yeah, but nothing else really surprised me too much in Philly. Like, I actually thought that with this new wave of just players that are good not playing ladder, like maybe we'll see some secret decks that we just didn't really see, but that wasn't the case at all.
Yeah, I mean, and the problem is, and, you know, not to be like insulting any players in the field, but because this tournament really only had a few like really top players in it, because it only mattered for a few players, you know, and the other ones are probably happy to take a break, who've been traveling all year round, I think people just wanted to consistently beat the locals, right? Like, they wanted to make sure if they faced local, they were beating them, so they weren't going for like a wacky deck, you know, style. They were more like, okay, how do I, like, give myself the most room to, like, for you to make mistakes? And I think, like, decks like Even Paladin, Even Warlock, you know, Maligos Druid just fit that build pretty well.
Right, that's true. And there were quite a few mistakes on the stream.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that was rough for me to watch. I was so...
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the players who had, like, the top 10 results of 2018, I mean, there were not very many there, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, obviously, you got to count Bloody Face in there because he's qualified for Worlds, but he was the only player qualified for Worlds I can think of. Oh, Viper was there too, right? He qualified for World.
Killen was there.
Oh, Killen was there as well. Yeah. Okay, so there were those three, and there were probably like, you know, a handful of people who had like over 100 ACT points, you know, for the year. But kind of like, if you want to separate like that top tier, I think there were fewer there than we were used to seeing at the other tour stops. And I think
ETC showed off his Gonk.
That's right. Yeah, I'm still not sure that Gonk belongs in that deck, but it's, you know,
I don't think so. He told me he was he liked Pounce.
No, he said he just, and I think he said to me he just kind of liked the deck. He was like, it's just fun, you know. And it's like, well, it's still Druid, right? So
when I was talking to him, like, when we
just to be clear, it was a Maligos Druid, but it had Gonk in it and Pounces. But
yeah, well, the thing is like, I submitted my lineup like when I was talking to him, because I like to submit way before I leave. Like, I don't like to do those last minute changes unless it's something drastic.
Yeah, just not letting yourself do them is like, if you could just lock it, it would be good sometimes.
No, but like, I was super sold on like Maligos Druid with Pounce for extra burst just being good. And then I was very surprised when I saw that he was also playing Gonk. I was like, I didn't expect that, because it was mainly just like, we were talking about Pounce just being good for extra burst in certain matchups.
Yeah.
But then he just threw in the Gonk, and I was just like, why? Like, I feel like the deck would have been cooler with just the Pounce, because, like, the Gonk is, like...
You know, you got that Twig that stuck for one turn, and then, you know, you play it on turn 6, and you Gonk on turn 7, and then you break your Twig against Odd Paladin, and you win the game.
I would be surprised if that ever happened.
I think he said it happened in one game. But I don't know if it was exactly that curve, but he gonked an Odd Paladin.
He still got top 8, and he only lost because... He lost the Even Warlock mirror where his opponent drew double Mountain Giant, and he did not.
Yeah, that does describe the Even Warlock mirror, yeah.
So, Danny, what about you in Wild? Has there been any new progressions in Wild metagame this week?
Not specifically. The meta, I mean, this set was not super impactful. So, I mean, there are certain packages that are changing where it's like, before you might run Ziliax and Reno Warlock, but now you're changing things up for Jeklik and all the other things. So there's tiny deck building changes, but ultimately this set's power level is very low, especially for a third set of the year. Like, if you look back, Mean Streets,
Kobolds,
they were all really strong. This seems like it was a set of a lot of tools, but nothing that really created its own like archetype.
Yeah, so, I was looking back. I was looking back earlier in this. expansion to see, like, why did this, you know, what exactly is different about this? You know, obviously, kobolds, they just kind of created cards that just fully create an archetype, right? They printed, like, half of the deck, half of the cards for Q-Block were, like, from that set, you know? But also what they've done a lot of times is taken cards that have been, like, sleeper cards for a long time and give them a tool to, like, bump them up in power level a ton, right? Like, what enabled Dragon decks to kind of, like, really jump up was when they printed Dragon on Operative, right? And what I realized was this year what they did was a lot of that was done in Witchwood, actually. And I think...
Yeah, it came early in the year rather than at the end.
I think the cards that, you know, it wasn't quite as big of a jump in power level, like, obviously, because they didn't do the set that kind of fully printed its own thing. But, you know, when they printed Shudderwalk, right, this was a card that turned, like, Chain Gang, Grumble, like, kind of, you know, Zola, like, put these all in Shaman, right, and, like, enabled this full new archetype. But you take the Shudderwalk away, and then those pieces really make any sense. And they've kind of done that previously with, like, what Shadow Reaper Anduin did to Reno Priest, right? Like, they're like, oh, wow, this is, like, this is a huge deal. It's enough to make the deck work, you know.
It almost seems like Genin Baku should have been a third set expansion rather than the first one, where you could have had a bunch of archetypes that were developed, and then all of a sudden you introduce two, like, very strong, like, 10 or so archetype-creating cards, and then they're just set out there. I think it would have been better if it was released this expansion rather than at the beginning of the year.
I also think the team went too all in on not printing new cards to support that. Like, I don't know if you saw Ixar recently posted on Twitter some Q&A stuff that he had, like, answered on Reddit, and he said, like, they're kind of focusing on not printing too many cards that support existing archetypes, like existing powerful archetypes. And I think that's kind of what's made these two last two expansions feel a little lackluster, is because, like, it's like, if you don't want to power creep and you don't want to support existing archetypes, then how are you going to change the meta enough, you know? And I think
that's the question. I mean, they could have just printed, like, okay, so for Dragon Warrior, they could have printed good dragon. Like, they printed some good dragons, but they gave... There were three or four dragons.
There were very few dragons in this expansion. There was the 3-6, the 3-6 deal, one to all, and then there was like the three or four
dragons. Like, Crowd Roaster.
Yeah, Crowd Roaster. Yeah.
There was only three good dragons printed in this set. But
there's no, like, cornerstone to make Dragon Warrior. There's no, like, this card is so good that I need to now run.
There's no Alex Strauss's champion. There's no...
Yeah. Well, and the dragon cards really weren't tempo dragons, right? Like, they're not. They're not even value dragons. And the problem is, like, a lot of the decks in the meta, value is not a thing right now. Like, there's not a lot of value decks seeing play, right? Like,
there's no bomb. They didn't print any bombs for dragons. Yeah. Like, they just didn't do anything with it. And I think that in the future set, like you said, like, there'll be a set that's going to enable these dragons at some point. But I don't know why they didn't do it now, because it doesn't clash with their theory of supporting existing archetypes.
Yeah, I mean, and that's fair. But, like, I also think, like, some weak archetypes, like, could have seen some broken cards to go with them, you know? Like, especially stuff that might be rotating soon, right? Like, you know, Dustbreaker is going to rotate in a year, so give Dragon Priest, like, some real tools to, like, end the year with that could be fun, you know? Like, it's, you know, like, I mean, I don't know if it needs to be dragons, but, like, they could have pushed harder on, like, breaking things a little bit. Like, I know people sometimes are worried about power creep, but, like, this whole year, like, you know, I posted some stats on Twitter on, like, how represented this year's sets are and, like, the various tournaments, and, like, every set is lower than the last, right? Like, you know, from HCT Philly, I think it was, like, 45% of the cards in the tournament were Year of the Mammoth, and, like, 16% were Year of the Raven.
Wow.
Yeah, I saw that. That's one thing that I wanted to talk about a little bit, was that post on Twitter, because I thought that was super interesting. And you make a lot of, like, fun content like that, where it's just, hey, look at these stats. Like, this is really interesting. And that was one that just kind of fits the narrative of the fact that the last year's sets, the Kobolds and Catacombs and the Frozen Throne, are just so powerful that they, like, the cards in those sets are seeing so much more play.
That's fair. I mean, I think the DKs are definitely, like DKs are meta warping, but I think some of, like, these, like, strong anti-control decks that we have right now are also kind of really limiting the decks that can exist in the meta, right? Like, and I don't know, I haven't really looked at how many of them are still going to be around in some form, but, like, right, like, if Quest Mage is really strong, it pushes, like, value decks out of the meta, right? Like, you can't outvalue a deck that just kills you all of a sudden, you know, like, turn 12, right? And Shudderwalk kind of does the same thing. And I think if, like, I mean, I think some people don't enjoy those metas as much either, but, like, I think the combo decks being too good right now, I think, is definitely, or not combo so much, but just any form of anti-control, is actually having like a potentially larger effect on the meta than DK. So obviously like Rexxar is like its own thing because that makes it really hard for decks that don't have a lot of value.
Yeah, I think that something that like at the beginning of Hearthstone, like the way that you would, this is something I learned really early on when I was playing in tournaments, it's just like the way that you would win control mirrors is by just being greedier. And now that's just not a, it's not really like a dynamic that even takes place anymore, where like you're winning your control mirrors because you're greedier. It
existed a little bit in like the LHS tournaments we had in Odd Warrior mirrors, but you know, if you had the, if you had the cubes, you would win. But that was like, that was the only real control mirror we had, you know, versus like even people talk about like in Cobalt, there were actually a lot of strong control decks because, you know, you could ban Q-Block, try to like out
Big Mage,
try to out armor Raza Priest, and you would get there sometimes, right? Like if you remember Worlds, Big Mage was beating Raza Priest in Worlds, you know.
That's my favorite. That's not my favorite deck, but that's like my favorite deck that was a thing recently. Yeah. Like, I love old style control warrior.
We didn't really get any new stuff. We didn't get any disruption tools either. Disruption tools, like if they reprinted Dirty Rat, like that could have a dramatic effect on the meta really fast.
Yeah, I don't know why. Like, they printed the Warlock card, but that doesn't even
see
any play.
I guess Mojo Master Zihi kind of fits that. I mean, that was one of the more popular cards from the set, and I think that'll probably end up seeing some play, like, especially, like, when you're building a lineup for champs, you know, like, some people will try that as, like, part of their strategy, for sure.
But it's not as good as we thought it was, honestly. Danny thought that card was nuts.
It's good, but it's not a thing that's gonna, like, win you the matchup, right? It, like, gives you a lot of extra percentages in those matchups, but, like, Dirty Rats were, like, a thing you needed to, like, consider about how you're gonna play around, versus, like, Mojo Master, it's like, well, they're just gonna have it at some point, it's not really a whole lot I'm gonna do about it, you know, like, it's gonna reset the mana, you know, did they draw it or not? Like, it's a little too binary.
Or Deathlord. They could have reprinted a Deathlord in some form.
Yeah, some form of like disruption, yeah.
Yeah, some sort of disruption.
Yeah, there's just no disruption going on right now. And, I mean, I think that's, like, it's good to go through the cycle, but yeah, this year has felt, I would say, like, I mean, Odd Paladin is still being run with zero cards since...
From the last two sets.
And, I Ixar, that was one of the questions he asked about that set. He said they didn't want to print more cards to support that archetype, but, like, it also just means... Like, they also haven't printed any decks that, like, they haven't done anything to push that deck down in the meta at all, either, you know?
Yeah, they haven't printed anything strong enough to interact with it, right? There are other ways,
without, like, nerfing, without, like, printing broken cards, they could have pushed that out of the meta, too. Like, I don't know how much they think about the meta, like, when they're designing the cards, but, like, if they had given Warrior tools that they wanted to run Warpath, like, and that made that deck fairly strong, you know, just needed to be, like, contention with some of the better decks, that would have been enough to, like, hurt Odd Paladin, right? Like... And it doesn't require a whole lot to do to, like, dramatically weaken a deck in the meta. You know?
Yeah, I agree. Danny, what were you saying?
I don't remember specific.
All right. Do you wanna wrap it up?
Yeah, sure. We can head on out of here. Well, first off, we want to plug our Patreon. We have patreon.com/WellMetPodcast. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, feel free to donate to our Patreon. We got a bunch of rewards, coaching, all the other tier levels for all that stuff. So yeah, it's definitely really appreciated. I'm good to head on out. So, why don't we do some shout outs and then how people can get in contact. So let's start off with you, Mega Man. Anything you want to go through and plug? Or
Everyone listening would follow my team. We're team Team Running Gun. Actually, I feel like I should know something about my head, but Team Running Gun on Twitter, and I'm Joshua_Gutman on Twitter, and you can find sure links to my to the team from there. And just shout out to all the players who have been with us this year, and really appreciate everyone in the community's support of the content I produce, and let me know what you'd like to see more of.
Oh man, that's like pretty classic. Just like, wait, what team do I own again? Let me think of this.
It's RNG Esports on Twitter. There, I found it.
Oh, that's funny.
You have to find the things that aren't taken already, you know? It's a challenge.
I feel you. I mean, Team RNG Esports, that's just perfect for Hearthstone team, right? What about you, Danny?
As for me, I don't really have any shout-outs this week, but you can find me on Twitter, DannyDonuts_HS. Yeah, don't really have much going on. Wild's been fairly dead for the past week or so. Nothing significant coming out.
Yeah. As for myself, shoutouts to Mega Man Music. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It was really good to get to talk to you and just get your opinions on things. I think you're a really smart person, and I enjoy listening to all that stuff and seeing your posts on Twitter.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks to Although, for having me on.
Yeah, yeah. Although you probably should tell Insom to stop yelling at Hearthstone Esports every day for 20 tweets a day. Oh, man.
I might encourage some of that. I might.
You might. You might poke the bear a little bit. You're just like, it's from his account. Who cares? Oh, man. But yeah, shout out to you for coming on. Definitely go follow Team Run a Gun Esports. They have some of my favorite players who maybe I'll try to get ETC to come on here sometime if he ever feels comfortable enough, but who knows. As for stuff like iTunes reviews, all that, JR isn't here this week, so we can't really actually see anything since he has access to all of that information, and like I said earlier, he was unable to make the podcast for reasons I'm not really sure, but couldn't do it. So, yeah, thank you again for joining us for episode 178 of Well Met. You can find more awesome Hearthstone content throughout the week at hearthstone.blizzpro.com. You can also tweet us at Well Met Podcast or email us at wellmet@blizzpro.com with the comments, questions, and ideas you have for the show. Thank you to Jake Butno for our amazing intro music, and thank you all for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.